Hi, everyone. We're back with another episode of Beneath the Surface, a podcast brought to you by the BC Mining Law Reform Network. My name is Umair Muhammad. Today, I'll be interviewing Simon Wabe about selenium pollution in British Columbia's Elk Valley. Simon is a former mineral exploration geologist and currently works as the mining policy and impacts researcher with WildSight. WildSight recently commissioned a report which suggests that the cost of reversing selenium pollution from the coal mines in southeastern BC could amount to $6.4 billion. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, Simon.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
To start with, could you tell us a little bit about WildSight and its work and mission?
Yeah, for sure. So WildSight is a conservation organization based here in the southeast corner of BC, the East Kootenays and West Kootenays. We've been doing conservation-related projects for just over 30 years at this point. We've got a lot of experience, and we've got a little bit of a, I don't want to toot our own horn here, but we've got a little bit of a reputation for punching above our weight class in terms of impacts, especially in the East Kootenays, but also elsewhere in BC. So we have quite a wide variety of conservation and environmental protection initiatives that we focus on, as well as education. We have we do a lot of work in environmental education, getting kids outside and thinking about the environment as something that they can be a part of instead of something that's out there, sort of inspiring new generations of people who actually care about the environment and don't want to see things ruined. So we do the education, we do recreation initiatives, we have people who work specifically on recreation-related environmental issues, and as well as industrial. We cover a lot of bases here. And recently a big thing on our radar has been we have quite a bit of coal mining in our region. And as we all know, with mining comes pollution. So a lot of my focus in this role as our mining analyst at WildSight has been on the water quality issues related to the Teck coal mines.
What is Teck?
That's a great question. Yeah. Teck is a BC-based mining company. They also have mines outside of BC, Alaska, and in South America, but a lot of their operations are in BC. The main ones that people know are the smelter in Trail, Highland Valley Copper, and in our region, the Kootenays, there's four, used to be five, enormous metallurgical coal mines, so coal that's used to make steel.
And WildSight recently commissioned a report on selenium contamination in southeastern British Columbia. So what prompted you to commission that report?
Yeah, so we've suspected for quite a while that the amount of money that Teck has put up with the government for, they put aside $1.9 billion. That's what they say it's going to cost to reclaim the mining damages in the area. They've estimated $1.9 billion to clean up these reclamation sites. They put up the legal amount that they are required to put up of that. But the funny thing is that we've been having these water quality issues for quite a while, and their Teck is very willing to put out their, they are very open to promoting their $1.5 billion that they've spent already in water treatment costs and water treatment research and facility building. It's all over their website, $1.5 billion. And that's separate from the $1.9 billion that's part of the reclamation. So that's the big giveaway that something has gone wrong, because water treatment should be part of the reclamation costs. And the amount that Teck has spent is almost as much as the total amount. No, it doesn't pass the very simple sniff test, right?
Right. This is a little bit of a technical thing. And so we did actually have an episode about this very recently on the podcast with Francesca Fionda. Mm-hmm. About reclamation securities and bonding for mining. But I'm wondering if we could just briefly summarize what that is and what it involves. Because I think most people,
yeah,
you know, even I don't, you know, every time I have to think about this, I have to kind of review it. So could you just sort of tell us what that is?
Absolutely. I appreciate you. I keep getting ahead of myself, so it's nice to have somebody to bring me back a few pegs. So reclamation liabilities are under BC law, mines have to estimate how much they think it will cost to reclaim the land and reclaim the water that's involved in mining process. Mining causes a lot of damage. And we're fortunate in BC that we have decent laws around these reclamation liabilities. A lot of places collect little to no liabilities. And the purpose of this is to have some money set aside so that if something goes wrong, as they often do in the mining world, mines go bankrupt, they sell to somebody who then goes bankrupt. There's a lot of legal loopholes that they can jump through to avoid paying for these costs. But the purpose of the reclamation liability is to say, you don't get to mine unless you put up this amount of money. And this amount of money should be enough to reclaim the damage. It's a very basic polluter should be paying principle.
Okay. And so in this case, Teck's reclamation liability is $1.9 billion. And so you're saying they have given that to the government. And alongside that, they've spent $1.5 billion just on water treatment.
Exactly. So the $1.5 billion that they keep saying that they've spent is completely separate from the liability. So on one hand, you have them saying it's going to cost $1.9 billion to clean up this mess. And on the other hand, they're saying we've already spent $1.5 billion trying to clean up this water. So there's a big disconnect here. And as we continue to see in the Elk River, the selenium levels continue to go up. So the $1.5 billion that they've spent isn't even solving the problem. So we know it's going to be a lot more.
All right. So now let's pull back again to something basic. So what is selenium and how is it making its way into BC's waterways? What about coal mining involves selenium and how does it then get into water? And then what sorts of ecological impacts can it have once it does get into the water?
So selenium is a naturally occurring element. It tends to concentrate in and around coal seams. So a lot of the times the coal itself will have high selenium and the rocks that surround the coal will have high selenium levels. And as mines proceed, they have to remove that rock that's around the coal to get to the coal, of course. And the easiest thing to do is to dump that in the nearest available hole or valley or wherever. So they take that waste rock, dump it in the valley, and it leaches this selenium out. Over centuries, this selenium will leach out of the waste rock. As rain falls, snow melts, water moves through the system, picks up the selenium, carries it into the river. And the selenium, when it gets into the river, it causes a lot of issues for the benthic invertebrates, the insects, as well as the fish. It tends to get concentrated in their tissues. They get, in a lot of these cases, they get chronic low-grade selenium poisoning, which really just kills their reproductive success chance. It's around 50%, some of the studies say. So you have all these fish that are 50% less likely to successfully reproduce. And in more extreme cases, you get some deformities, like spinal deformities. You get missing gill plates on the fish. It's not pretty. And selenium flows downstream. It goes down into the Lake Koocanusa into Montana, back up throughout BC and the Columbia River. The fish in Montana are seeing impacts as well. So it's not localized to the Elk Valley. It's throughout the Columbia River system. We're seeing this poisoning.
Right. And there's a risk of it getting into drinking water as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The nearby city of Fernie, as well as the municipal district of Sparwood, which are very near the mines, and they rely quite a lot on the economic output of the mines to survive. But both of them have had to move drinking water supply wells in recent years.
Right. And, I was just thinking about this because I've seen selenium being sold as a supplement. My doctor told me that I need to take vitamin D as a supplement because listeners of the podcast can't tell, but I have a moderate amount of melanin. And so it's harder for me to get vitamin D unless I spend a lot of time in the sun, which like most of us, we don't. So I have to go to the supplement aisle and get vitamin D. And while I'm there, I'm looking around and then sometimes I've also seen selenium. So
yeah,
I guess there's a certain amount of it that we need, But then I also remembered watching a House episode a very long time ago. I don't know if you'll recall, Simon.
I don't remember the episode, but I liked House. Yeah.
So I think it's an episode about they have to like treat some CIA agent and they don't exactly know what's going on as always. But eventually it turns out that he has selenium poisoning because he eats Brazil nuts.
Brazil nuts? Yeah, there we go.
Because if you eat a lot of Brazil nuts, you get too much selenium. An overabundance of selenium can kill you.
Yeah. No, I believe that one Brazil nut a month gives you your monthly supply of selenium. So it's like it's a very small amount of selenium that is important for human life as well as animal life. Like it becomes toxic very quickly after that initial threshold is met, but it is important for selenoproteins, I believe, in our bodies. So it's an interesting case where it's very dose dependent and natural background levels are sufficient for providing selenium amounts to the fish. But yeah, one Brazil nut is enough for us for a month.
Okay. I actually think I have some Brazil nuts, but I don't eat them, especially after watching that House episode.
Yeah, maybe not handfuls, but once in a while you should be good. Or you could come down to the Elk Valley, grab a few liters of water, and you should be good as well.
Just go for a swim, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually used to live in Sparwood, actually. I've toured one of the coal mines. It's quite an achievement.
Oh, yeah. Just the volumes of rock that they've moved and the impacts, you can see it from space, I'm sure. It's crazy. I'm trying to think of a better word than human achievement, but humans did achieve that.
No, yeah, I always sort of think of that, you know, like it's impressive what we can do.
Absolutely.
And the scale of what we can do. And like, if we applied this to other domains,
mm-hmm.
maybe that would be better rather than digging out coal.
There's more money in solving world hunger, you know.
Okay, so getting back to the report. So you suggest, or not you, but the report suggests that the costs for mitigating selenium contamination could eventually amount to $6.4 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, as we've mentioned, the reclamation security that Teck has given to the province is just $1.9 billion. So could you sort of discuss the implications of this gap? You know, first of all, why does it exist?
Yeah.
And then what could it mean for the future of reclamation efforts?
Yeah. So when the inspector of mines is deciding how much liability to actually charge these mines, there's a back and forth. The mine says this is going to cost X billion dollars. And the inspector of mines says, we would like you to provide that. But in between there, there's some haggling. And so we know from our response, from Tech's response to our mining report, that Tech has said at least, I think it was $800 million in capital costs over the next couple years shouldn't have been included in our report because we made arrangements with the inspector of mines, which indicates that there's some haggling going on. There's some sort of system where they're bypassing the nature of the liability system in order to save money. And this is all done behind closed doors. We don't know anything that's going on other than at once a year, we get a report from the inspector of mines saying we get the $1.9 billion number in this case, and we get numbers for every mine in BC, but we don't know what goes into those calculations. So this report basically was to call attention to that fact, say, hey, this $1.9 billion is A, it's not enough. B, we're not following the letter of the law here. We're not including vast amounts of money that would be involved in actually cleaning up these issues if something were to go wrong, right?
Yeah. So I guess the second part of my question about sort of what are the implications ultimately of this gap? I mean, Tech's going to have to spend the money to clean up, right?
I would love to say yes to that. But in the mining world, things go wrong very quickly. And just last year, I believe we haven't gotten to this part of the conversation, but Glencore, another mining company, they have major coal mines in Colombia, and they recently abandoned two of them. They were operating mines. COVID hit. They ceased operations. Glencore gave their mining permits back to the government, said, this is not our problem anymore. Find a new operator. We're moving on. And so these mines continue to sit, and Colombia hasn't been able to find operators for the mines. So they're not operational. They're not reclaimed. There's nobody that would even be responsible for reclaiming these mines. And obviously this is in another country. We have different laws here, but there are examples in BC of similar things happening, like the Britannia water treatment facility. You might have heard it was a copper mine on the West Coast that operated until the 70s. I might be wrong on the dates and stuff, but it was continuing to leach acid rock drainage into the ocean for multiple decades. And eventually BC taxpayer got saddled with the water treatment facility bill. And it was, I think it was on the order of $40 or $50 million in cost. And here in the Kootenays, the coal mines are huge. And we have, you know, Teck already has 4 operating water treatment facilities. They have plans for 5 more by 2027, I believe. So if we extrapolate those costs out, you know, it hits that $6.4 billion pretty quick.
And then also just to note that the $6.4 billion is just for selenium. Like, you guys didn't consider all of the other reclamation, right?
It's just for selenium, and it's not even for all of the selenium. This wouldn't remove all the selenium produced by the mines.
Okay, could you explain that?
So the $6.4 billion, we chose to target exactly what Teck says they will do by 2027. They want to build these 5 extra facilities and then operate those facilities for 60 years into the future. But the engineer that we hired calculated that these facilities would be enough to treat about half of the water that will be selenium loaded from these waste rock piles. So you're roughly treating half of the selenium problem with that $6.4 billion, which would have a big impact on the selenium levels in the system, but it wouldn't be back to historic levels.
And then I noticed that as part of the report, the report included the response from Teck as well as the province to the report, or to their findings in the report. I guess the final report probably wasn't given over to them. So could you talk about what their responses were?
Yeah, so Teck mainly centered around their argument that we either don't know the reclamation policy very well and chose not to, or that we just chose not to follow it.
So who doesn't know the reclamation policy? They don't know, or you don't?
Teck argued that we don't know. And they do, like, there is some validity to that argument, because we know what's written down in the liability report policy documents, but we don't know what's actually being followed. We know that things aren't being included in the actual liability amounts that should be under water treatment facility construction and operation for 100 years into the future is supposed to be covered by the policy. But we know Teck's response to our document itself states that there are things that are not included in the policy that should be, in their reclamation amount that should be. So things aren't being followed, and we don't know what, and we would really like more transparency on the issue.
Right, because we don't know what happens when they go into the meeting rooms.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's, there are places in, I believe, Alaska and Nevada both have similar reclamation liability systems, but they make these calculations and the reports public, and they have public comment periods where organizations like us at WildSight or Mining Watch or the BC Mining Law Reform Network could look at these documents and say, hey, this is reasonable. We should charge this amount. At least we know what's going in, and we could comment on it. But we really just don't know. We know what should be in, and we know that it's wrong, the amount that is being charged, but we've just been kept in the dark.
Okay, so that's concerning. And then what did the province say?
It was, there are a lot of good people at the province that we've had chances to talk to. The response, I would say, hasn't been super substantial. Yeah, it's difficult to say actually what we achieved by through discussions with the province themselves, multiple meetings, as well as meetings with the federal government, but not a lot came out of it, to be honest.
So far, just wait until this podcast is published.
Well, we're going to crack it open, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so then what are the next steps for WildSight in addressing the issues that you've highlighted in the report?
Yeah, so currently Teck's coal assets are in the process of being sold to Glencore, as I mentioned their name earlier, as well as some steelmakers in Asia. But this deal is currently under federal investigation with the Investment Canada Act. We're hoping to get some sort of response on that in the next few months. Nobody really knows, but we'll see what happens. And our main goal on this coal issue is to keep the pressure up for enforcing stronger bonding reclamation requirements. We're not here to try to scuttle the deal. That's not our plan. What we want to make sure is that there are environmental protections in place for this deal. If that could be achieved, then I would feel a lot more comfortable as a resident of the Kootenays.
And then finally, you know, what can listeners do, and especially those who live in southeastern BC, you know, what can they do to support or even get involved with WildSight's efforts in their own communities?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of things going on. WildSight.ca. We're always putting on events. We have offices all over the Kootenays: Nelson, Creston, Revelstoke, Golden, Kimberly Cranbrook is our main one. Yeah, we love to have people get involved. Newsletters, we got everything. We're something to interest everybody. I feel like anybody who lives in the Kootenays could benefit from some of our materials at least. So please, yeah, check us out.
Okay, and then we'll include a link to the report as well as to the website and where how people can get involved in the description to the podcast. Thanks so much for taking the time, Simon.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's I love the work you guys do, and it's good to be a part of it.
Thanks to Simon for taking the time to come on the podcast, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. If you're not subscribed, we encourage you to do so. We also encourage you to share this podcast with anyone you know who might find it interesting. And really, who wouldn't find it interesting? This is enthralling stuff. So I say, just send it to everybody. And make sure to check out the episode description for a link to the report Simon and I chatted about. You'll also find a link there to a page where you can become a member of WildSight. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.